How's it going? And welcome to episode 158 of On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On the Wire Pod. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me at 80 grade. That's all spelled out. And Kevin Hastings is at Hastings Kevin on the Twitter himself. Got a great show lined up as we preview the third overall fab run of the season, Kevin. In some personal news, I got to add to my list, my stadium list, this past week as I was traveling for work, and I happened to be in Minneapolis. Got to go to Target Field that for their home opener. That was awesome. I felt like a slub though, because I did not stay. I did not have time to stay the entire game. I actually only stayed a couple of, so I got standing room tickets, and I was only there. I was only able to stay through the first three, and Pablo Lopez was perfect through his first three. He did not stay perfect. So I texted my buddy and I apologized to him. Pablo on his team, and I'm like, I'm sorry, I must have done something, because as I left, things became less perfect as time went on. But great stadium. They, as I tweeted out, they have some great stats that they put up on the LED boards for every pitch that I have not quite seen at most stadiums. So that was pretty cool. How's your opening first full week of baseball? How'd that treat you?
It's going pretty well, Adam. Thank you. I didn't get to go to a home opener, but it's going pretty well. Sat through that long rain delay a couple of days ago for Baltimore, Kansas City. Mm-hmm. I was so excited with the time difference here in Hawaii. Right. I was up at 6 a.m. grilling hot dogs, ready for a 7 a.m. start. Started at noon my time, so I had my fill of hot dogs by then. But yeah, things are going great. And, you know, the one thing is, we could just say everybody's hurt and we got to find replacements, and we'll talk to you next week. End of show.
All right. So that was a great episode 158 of On the Wire. Thanks for joining us. You're absolutely right. I wouldn't say it's been a crazy week. It's just been like 48 hours. It's like, it's all kind of
happened. The last couple of days. Yes.
Yes. Oh man. It's, unfortunately, painful. Obviously, this is going to be the just pain. Yes, pain is going to be the majority of our first section of the pod, of course, in the news section. Just kind of checking all the boxes, listening them all off. I'm sure most everybody listening has heard one way or another of most of the things we're going to talk about. But, you know, we got to bring them up. We got to figure out what we're going to do with them, if anything. And so I guess, Gavin, let's get. Just get right into it. I'll get this one out of the way, like we did last week. Yuri Perez, he's already announced he's having Tommy John surgery. Obviously, you're dropping him. Nothing really to do here, right? Because he's been out of the rotation for a while. The Marlins have already been kind of dealing with his absence. So his official surgery announcement doesn't really impact anything, right?
Yeah, I don't think so. Not too much. Couple of guys I think we're expecting back relatively soon. Braxton Garrett, Edward Cabrera, I think at some point we're going to see back. Max Meyer in the meantime, like we've been seeing. Miami's got a pretty tough schedule this week at the New York Yankees and then back home against Atlanta. So does it matter? Are we throwing any of these guys anyway?
Yeah, that's fair. All right, well, let's get into the newer ones then. We got, unfortunately, more elbow issues. Let's just start off with Shane Bieber. I like how the wording on this is very specific. He needs UCL reconstructive surgery. There is no title given to said surgery in the announcements that I read, but, you know, we all know what it is. So Shane Bieber will not be pitching for any of our teams this year. For the remainder of the season. But what are our options in Cleveland, or how are we looking at the rotation as it kind of cleans itself up for the Guardians?
I think the guy we will probably see here, he's on the IL due to an illness, but it appears he's going to be back and get a start against the Chicago White Sox this week, and that's Xavion Curry. Mm-hmm. that's the way it's looking. If he's starting that game, I would love to have him on my roster and start him. He's only thrown 2 2/3 innings so far this season, so I'm not expecting him to go deep, maybe not even 5, but it's the White Sox. Crazier things could have happened. He could get through 5 innings on 45 pitches versus this team. I'm willing to throw just about anybody against the White Sox right now, and we'll get more into that. I mean, that's getting easier and easier to do by the day, as we'll talk here in a little bit.
Yeah, yes, exactly. It's definitely a bullet point that we'll get to. But that's called a tease, everybody. So let's move on to something else here, Kevin. Let's just get all of this, you know, pitcher elbow issues out of the way here. Spencer Strider, he got his MRI. He has damage to his UCL. No official word as to what the treatment will be, whether it's surgery, whether it's rest, whatever. Like, we saw, you know, what happened with Cole. You know, he's out, you know, 1 to 2 months, and then they'll see what's going on. We saw what happened with Bieber. He's getting surgery. We don't know technically what's going on with Strider. So the simple question here, the long question is, if you have Strider, are you dropping him without any news? So we're recording this on Saturday night. We still don't have final results. There's a strong possibility we don't get final results on a Sunday. Especially from Atlanta, of all teams, because they do a really good job of controlling who knows what information and who gets to announce things. Like, Atlanta is the one that's like 99% of their signings actually come from them, and they don't come from Passan or anybody else. So they have to do a good job of kind of gatekeeping that information. So if they don't want us to know, we won't know. So if you don't know and you have Strider, are you holding on to him for at least another week, or are you just cutting bait? Because there are so many teams that are going to be bidding big bucks this week to fill all these gaps that we're seeing, and not even the big ones, but I mean, there's still players that are streaming, even in 15 teamers. These are the early season. We are looking at a whole bunch of opportunities to stream. Even if we don't love the player pool, there's going to be a lot of action this week in Fab. So if you don't drop him, you risk the pool being even worse next week. And if you do drop him, you risk anything close to like positive news, and maybe he's back in, you know, 2 months at best type of thing. What are you doing here?
As optimistic as I would like to be, and I tend to be in most aspects of my life, I am not. It was Spencer Strider right now. I think, sure, if my team is healthy, everybody looks good, I could pick up a couple of streamers I want and still hold him for another week. Yeah, I probably hold him. But in most cases, I'm going to be realistic and go ahead and let him go. Try to get that spot filled right now. Dr. Meister is not a name we want to hear. And we don't know when Strider is visiting him. Date yet to be determined. I'm assuming that's Monday. So we will not know prior to Fab running Sunday night, but I'm under the assumption that Strider's at least going to miss a few months, if not the rest of the season.
Yeah, and it's tough. I mean, you're just, even if he's going to miss at minimum, like the same situation as Gerrit Cole, if he's going to miss the 2 months, you don't know what kind of shape he's going to be in when he comes back. Or at least what shape his elbow is going to be when he comes back, what kind of control he's going to have.
Yeah, he wasn't good yesterday. It's almost a good thing that we know the reason he wasn't good, right? Of course, we don't want him to be injured, but it could be a while even after he comes back. That's the horrible thing here.
Let's just add in the extra gray area, right? It's not technically news, but like Max Fried, Kevin Gausman did not look good today either. No official word that I've seen as to why, or they just had a bad day. All their velocities were all over the place. So, you know, this might get worse before it gets better. And I'm not willing to, I don't have Strider in a bunch of places. I think I've got two rosters with him on it in the NFBC platform. And so I'm 99% sure I'm dropping him this week because I don't want to risk not having options even more so next week. Best case scenario, I drop him. He looks like he's going to come back in 2 months. I'll bid on him again. Like I'll just be part of the bidding process the following week. So, there you go. All right. Well, somebody not so injured. We got an addition to a rotation. The New York Mets signed Julio Teheran to a major league deal. He is now scheduled, last time I saw, he's scheduled to start on Monday, which if he holds on to that, obviously puts him into an opportunity of getting a two-step. Is this a situation just because it'll be his debut this year? He's going to start right away on a team that, whatever your opinions of the Mets are, the opinions of the Mets, that's fine, but it's still a two-step. Is this something that we should be interested in the short term and possibly the long term?
I'm more interested in the long term than the short term. I am not starting him at Atlanta in his debut for the season. Absolutely not. And he gets the Royals over the weekend, probably. And unless they got some guys back, it's kind of interesting. This, according to Roster Resources grid that I'm looking at right now. He would get the Royals again on Saturday. And it's just, not that I'm avoiding the Royals with pitchers. They have been scoring more runs recently than we're typically used to and had a few good days. But, yeah, at Atlanta, not even to get the Royals, am I throwing somebody in their season debut at Atlanta. They could give up 10 earned runs in the first inning and a third. So,
hey, Garrett Crochet did pretty good. Crochet did fine, and we were all worried about that after his debut, right? And then went to Atlanta. He held his own. Actually did quite well. Surprised some people. Yep. So
it's too scary for me though. Yeah. Julio Teheran is not Crochet either, right? There was a time when he thought he might be at some point. Didn't come to fruition. So, yeah, but more long term, it's somebody we got to keep an eye on, especially if he does throw well against Atlanta. Then in a daily pickup league, then I am interested in using him at home against Kansas City later in the week and going forward, because as we just talked about, our options are getting more and more limited by the game that is played, basically.
Not even by the day, just by the game. It's not been pleasant. I'm not having fun. let's have some fun because we do have some pitchers that are entering the chat. Okay, we have some pitchers that are joining the fray this week. They're probably all rostered. You're not fabbing them, but it is interesting to know that at least there is a tiny little silver lining to your pitching rosters if you're lucky enough to have them on. Expected to come back this week. Nick Lodolo, obviously Cincinnati. Justin Verlander is expected to make his debut. Sonny Gray didn't even want to do a rehab. He said, he's like, I'm ready. He did a sim game and he's like, that's good enough. Send me in. St. Louis said, no, we're going to hold back. He's going to do a rehab, but he would be expected to make his debut in St. Louis or for the Cardinals probably toward the end of next week. And then Blake Snell is scheduled to finally make his debut for San Francisco this coming week. If you have all of these guys on a roster, which by ADP is totally possible, which one are you? I mean, is there one that you're not willing to start if you have the flexibility to not start one of them for this coming week for their debut?
No, I think I'd run them all out there. There are some people that don't necessarily like to start a pitcher in their first game back. They like to see how many innings they could go, let them get work the rust out. And I understand that. I may have been hesitant with Nick Lodolo, but he's just looked so good. And then especially his return got bumped a couple of days rather than starting at Great America Small Park against Milwaukee. He is at the Chicago White Sox. As we talked a few minutes ago, I'm throwing anybody in that situation. Love the Snell probably gets a two-step this week at home against Washington already. I'm using him regardless, even if it was at Colorado. It's not. It's at Tampa. Yeah, I think I'm throwing any of these guys. My only hesitation might have been Lodolo. That was remedied by how well he has looked in his rehab starts, and then that bump to get the White Sox instead. That's just icing on the cake.
Do you see any of these guys kind of bumping out anybody from their established rotations that have any interest, or you might have had interest in holding on to? Now they're kind of a clear drop, or you're not really looking at them on the wire anymore?
I don't think so. Anybody I was interested in, if they're healthy, I'm remaining interested because, as we're seeing, we'll need them before long.
All right, that's fair. All right, well, that's enough pitchers injuries to talk about, and if there are more, I'm just done talking about them. You can look those up on your own. Let's get into some hitter injury news. Unfortunately, still injury, but at least we're getting off the mound here. Trevor Story, he was breathing in pain, holding his shoulder. Turns out he had dislocated shoulder. He goes onto the IL. No timetable that I can tell, but, you know, obviously a minimum stay of 10. I would expect this to be a little bit longer than that. Are we, you know, what, I mean, I, as the Red Sox fan, I'm asking you still, but infield for the Red Sox. We've seen some interesting action come out of there so far this season. And with, you know, with Von Grissom not making the, you know, not being healthy himself to start the season, that middle infield has got some opportunity here. If you're looking for middle infield help, are you looking into the Boston Red Sox options?
Maybe. And you know, I'm going to flip this back around to you, being the Red Sox guy here, but it appears to me that the shortstop position is going to be a strict platoon. Pablo Reyes facing lefties, and he had done that and played second base even prior to the Story injury. Now he played shortstop today versus a lefty. I see that to continue going forward. The strong side of the platoon, I believe, here will be David Hamilton, and that's who I have a little bit of interest in, and I'm hoping you can either make me feel better about that or talk me out of it.
No, I mean, I'm a fan. If Hamilton gets any kind of run, you know, at the very least, his calling card is going to be speed. And the Red Sox have shown that they will let him run. Cora hasn't been a manager that is like really, really established a strong running presence, unless you are a player that is really shown like, hey, I know what I'm doing out there. Like I know how to run the bases. I have the speed. I have the talent. Hamilton has all of that. And so if he gets any kind of a run, he would be somebody I'd be very interested in if I'm, you know, definitely if I'm low on speed, stolen bases specifically, he very well could just be a streamer in the category, depending on where he ends up being in the lineup on any given day. The name that, you know, interested me until recently, has been Emmanuel Valdez, who started off pretty hot at second base. A little bit of worry talking to Sarah Sanchez in our Glarf chat, worried about whether or not, you know, the time was going to be taken away from Valdez as Von Grissom made his way into the conversation. I would venture to guess that even if Grissom comes in now at this point, Valdez is going to find his, he's going to keep his spot in the rotation. He hasn't really been performing as of late, but you know, these things really, they can, the rankings that you see on player performances in the first week and a half of the season, 2 weeks of the season, they can fluctuate pretty quickly based on one single game. You go over four, bam, your average goes from 400 to 200 or something crazy. You go 4 for 4 and then all of a sudden you're an all-star again. Those would be names that I think are worth keeping an eye on, and as far as their production value go in the middle infield for the Red Sox. But I'm expecting to see Story miss a decent chunk of change in playing time as he comes back from what looked as though was a very painful injury in the moment.
So I think David Hamilton can help me in a couple of spots where I need a middle infielder in 15 team leagues. Would you be interested in a 12 as well, or do you think I can do better?
I would say that I can imagine that you'd be able to do better than Hamilton in a middle infield spot in a 12 teamer, unless it was a head to head league. I'd be much more interested in Hamilton in a head to head league where I needed that category that week. If you knew he was going to start and it was a daily moves league, that kind of thing, which I definitely have a league like that, and I will be looking in that general direction. and then once you get what you need out of them, bam, it's like streaming a starting pitcher. In those scenarios, you can be on your way, as I plan to do so with the likes of JP France that I started today, and I have to pick up somebody else to start on Sunday before we finish up this podcast. So yeah, I would do the same thing in that kind of a situation in a head to head, but in a roto, it's tough, especially in a weekly league. You don't know what kind of playing time you're going to get out of him. And in a 12 teamer, we're not quite at the point in the season where you're desperate enough to be like, I absolutely need this one category and I'm going to get it out of this. And there's no guarantee you're going to get him out of him. You're pretty sure you are, but you're not going to get a whole lot more. So, all right, let's stay in the middle infield here, but we'll head over to Arizona where they are still waiting on results for an MRI for Geraldo Perdomo on his knee. This is another situation kind of like Spencer Strider, Kevin. Like, are we waiting long enough to care what the results are here to just kind of move on to maybe somebody like David Hamilton in a 15 teamer or another middle infield option? Is Perdomo do enough for you to kind of hold on to him for a week in a 15 teamer? I don't think the conversation needs to be had in anything less than that.
Yeah, that's the tricky part, right? Because he's not amazing, but some runs, some RBI, you know, and he can help our teams due to volume in the runs and RBI categories. Double digit stolen bases are expected. He did steal 16 last year in 144 games. So, but it's tricky in these deeper leagues. That's pretty valuable. And, you know, I think it's a little different than somebody like Strider, even though he's definitely not to the quality of player that Spencer Strider is, but for what he does, and we don't really know, you know, he's still not on the IL. This occurred Wednesday. Now we're at Saturday and they did an MRI on Saturday because he still had a knee discomfort. I might try to wait if I can. Of course, if I need the spot, then he's an easy drop anywhere, but in a couple of spots, I might try to wait. But if I need the spot, absolutely not. Got to let him go. I think, you know, Blaze Alexander, we talked about last week, and Arizona does face a lot of left-handed pitching again this coming week. I believe half their games, 3 out of 6. So Blaze Alexander is somebody I'm looking at. And then when they get back into facing mostly righties, like we typically see for most teams, good old Jace Peterson. That's why I drafted him in the 45th round of DCs, right? He's going to get his playing time somehow. So I think you can move on in most instances, but if I have a healthy team, I might hold on for a week and hope he's healthy.
Yeah, obviously it depends on your roster construction and how many pitchers you have to replace and like exactly. where your attention is going to be going.
You might just forget about Perdomo with all the moves you have
to make. I got bigger fish to fry here. Yeah. Let's worry about what we have to worry about. One more infielder that you may or may not have to worry about, Jaimer Candelario. He suffered a hyperextended elbow. I have had a hard time finding updates here, but Kevin, I think you might have. Are you worried about this kind of an injury? As somebody who has not had that many injuries, like knock on wood, not many injuries, I have to say I've hyperextended my knee, and at a concert, somebody who should have been not crowd surfing was crowd surfing, and I was their pillow as they fell to the ground, and I mean, I was in my early 20s. I did not really go see anybody. I went to go see a nurse. They were like, yep, you're hyperextended to your knee. You're going to be walking around with a limp for a while. 3 days later, I was pretty much as good as new. So I can imagine that Candelario, with everything that he has as a professional athlete at his disposal, is probably going to be okay. Is this something that you're worried about?
I was slightly concerned originally, and then we got the news that he would DH until he was ready to get back in the field. And now, as of Saturday, he played third base, 1-for-4 with a walk and a double. So, yeah, I think we dodged a bullet here.
Yeah, I think I agree. I love to see him play, but like there are definitely injuries that you worry about them playing through, hamate, wrist, things like that. So if they're on a team where they have a sketchy history of dealing with injuries or bringing guys back too soon or et cetera, et cetera, I'd be a little bit more worried in this situation. The Cincinnati has not been, they haven't really fallen on either side as far as I'm concerned. They've had their fair share of injuries, but most teams have already as well. But I don't associate Cincinnati with a particular stance on that issue. So besides going, over, seems to be doing okay playing the field, and we're holding a bat and standing in there. A couple of injuries that are a little bit more worrisome, as they did result in IL stints. We finally get to that tease here with the Chicago White Sox losing Eloy Jimenez to the IL. And Luis Robert Jr. Injured his hip flexor. He hits the IL as well. Robbie Grossman joins the roster in lieu of at least Eloy, the corresponding move for Eloy hitting the IL. So before we get to the main crux here, are we interested in Robbie Grossman at all? Do you expect him to kind of fill in for one of these spots? I think I put this in here originally just for Eloy, and then Robert hit the IL too. So I think the answer is possibly different than if only one of them hit the IL. But what's your do you have any interest in Robbie Grossman if you need any kind of outfield help?
My interest in Robbie Grossman for the last couple of years has been concentrated on daily change leagues and DFS. Pick his spots, the right matchup. He's not somebody I want to plug in my lineup for an extended period of time. So there is some slight interest, not a whole lot for me. It's kind of crazy just how bad this White Sox lineup has gotten. And we projected it was going to be bad, but even I was one that thought Andrew Vaughn, post type sleeper, it's got a 525 OPS. I know we're only 10 days into the season, but this is
those trying at home, that is so, not good.
I would throw just just about any major league starter against this team right now in most situations. That's where I'm at. And I had Luis Robert share. I believe I may have had an Eloy. I have a couple of Nicky Lopez in really deep leagues where I use him as a middle infielder now and then. But I mean, they're throwing Nicky Lopez, Martin Maldonado. These guys, we know these guys can't hit, and they're in the lineup every day.
Every day.
Andrew Benintendi, I don't think has hit anything other than a single in four seasons, and he leads off every single day for this team. It's bad. I know we have apologized to Mike Carter several times throughout the off seasons as we talk about this team, but yeah, sorry, Mike. It's just ugly. I almost any starting pitcher I'll stream against this team, and I don't want to have anything to do with any of the offense.
I am very much looking forward to my pickup of Alec Marsh for tomorrow. I picked him up a couple days ago with preparation for this start, and it's just getting better and better, and the game hasn't even started yet. So this is obviously what we've been teasing most of this section of the podcast is, you know, how excited are you to stream against the White Sox at this point? And you nailed it. It's like, I will throw pretty much anybody.
They're rocky road, both home and away for me. You know, I'll jump at anybody I see with the White Sox on the schedule.
That's I think that would be like, that's the Superman ice cream. I don't know, like, it's everywhere out here. It's like three different types of ice cream in one. It's the only ice cream my kids get, and it's like, it looks terrible, but they love it because it's like three different colors and it's all swirled together and it's just a mess. Exactly what the White Sox are. So yeah, looking forward to that. I mean, I'll even be looking at, like, when teams throw bullpen games at them. I mean, like, I will just do my best to figure out who's the first man in as the follower. And we'll go from there. All right, let's we got two more replacements for some hitters this past week or past couple days. First and foremost, Victor Robles got replaced by Jacob Young in Washington, getting called up. And then Jason Hayward hits the IL for the Dodgers, replaced by Taylor Trammell. Jacob Young, a lot less experienced. Taylor Trammell has been around the block a couple places. But if either one of these guys is going to get any kind of run with their respective National League squads, are you taking notice?
Maybe. It's interesting that Jacob Young is getting the starts in center field versus left-handed pitching. And Washington faces three lefties this week, two out of three in the first half of the week. So in a 15-team league, if I am in need of a fifth outfielder, there's a little bit of interest here. No power to speak of, but he has repeatedly stolen double-digit bases and even 52 bases at single A back in 2022. He had 39 at high A and double A last season, and already had one at triple A this season before getting this call. So there is a little bit of interest here in Jacob Young. He's probably short side of platoon first half of this week. If you have enough room to use a spot for a guy for just half a week, it's somebody that I would take a look at for this week coming up. And then going forward, I don't know that we'll see him get plate appearances versus righties, but if we would start to see that, then that would pique my interest a little more.
Sure. And Taylor Trammell, not sure how much playing time he's going to see with the Dodgers, but the fact that I'm sorry to say, it was bound to happen. Jason Hayward would hit the IL at some point. Interesting that they kind of went out of their way to claim or trade for, Taylor Trammell in this situation. And he gets the first call up when the opportunity arises, just because it's the lineup. We talk about this. We talked about this last week with having a piece of the Atlanta lineup, having a piece of the Dodgers lineup. Is that just as interesting as I would say with Houston in past, Atlanta this year as well, Dodgers kind of in the same boat, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we know the Dodgers are going to play their matchups. We have seen that so far, even with Hayward's injury. We've seen Enrique Hernandez in center field versus lefties. We see Miguel Rojas getting start every time the Dodgers face a left-handed starter. Pretty strict platoon here. Worth keeping an eye on the projected starters they're going to face and get these guys in there, even that are on a short side of platoon, because yes, absolutely. If you can get a piece of this lineup cheaply, then it's usually going to be worth it.
Yeah. I mean, of course they've got backups up the wazoo. You know, we're talking Andy
Padres. It feels like they have a 55 man roster,
right? It's not quite fair on both sides of the ball. I mentioned Andy Padres, Miguel Vargas, obviously all, you know, outfield eligible guys on the 40 man. They could be called back up at any time. And instead they go out of their way to bring in Taylor Trammell, and he gets the call up. I just, that was almost befuddling to me. But you know, if they see something, or if it's pure time manipulation, I don't know. Obviously there's nothing to worry about with Trammell in that range, or in that realm. So, all right, enough injury talk. 'Cause unfortunately, like, I don't know, like 98% of the things we talked about in this section had to do with people being hurt. It is a part of the game. We get it. We're not going to sit here. This is not the podcast that will sit here and speculate on why all these injuries are happening. There are plenty of other podcasts that are doing that and doing it well. We're talking about guys that just what's going to happen with the guys that are hurt, whether you're fabbing them, whether you're dropping them, what have you. So with that all being said, we're going to move on to kind of the meat and potatoes part of this episode. We have double fab to worry about, Kevin. This is the beauty of this, like, third run of fab. We have fab on Sunday, and then for those who play in the cut line, the NFBC cut line and or Raz Slam, which is formatted the same way, the best ball tournament that also has two fab runs throughout the course of the season. First fab run comes up this coming Tuesday, next one up and not until June. So you've got still the full $1,000 budget, and it is best ball, so it's like you just got to fill your spots. First and foremost, like, what your general strategy for this kind of a fab run versus your weekly fab run? I'll get the obvious out of the way. Like, you're not worried about only spending $20 like as you do in your weekly. You don't have to spread it out. You only get two chances at this. But in general, are you spending more money in this first fab run, or are you holding off and spending it in June, hoping you can get like the hammer that you would get in like an AL or NL only league, where a guy that maybe gets traded, you know, the typical hammer we talk about at the deadline. What's your typical stance here on this particular type of fab run?
And in most cases, I'm spending more this fab run than in the second fab run, with, you know, the narrative that I get the players longer. The biggest thing for me with these cut line fab runs, and there are some NFBC players that play dozens and dozens of these cut line leagues, and they've probably been working on this fab run for a month.
Sure.
Because the biggest thing is you have dead roster spots, right? With these leagues were drafted, I think Raz Slam was early February, cut line started drafting I believe last year, not quite as early as Draft Champions and some of the leagues that we drafted, but I they've been going for several months. There, mm-hmm. you have players that are injured and out or didn't make the team and don't look like they're coming up anytime soon. your waterfall bids, your backup bids, your lists need to be dozens with an S on the end, dozens of players long. It's best ball. Having somebody that can't contribute in a best ball week is horrible. Anybody that is getting any playing time at all is better than a zero. So those lists need to be extremely long of backup bids. You got to make sure that you fill every spot to maximize the scoring potential for your team.
So I get that totally, but I guess we're always like, you still have to prioritize. Like, you can't just be like, I want to fill my roster, you know, so I'm just going to fill them with players. And yes, I get it's best ball, but are you prioritizing filling the roster with the same type of or positional player that you're dropping? Or is it, again, does it not matter? You literally just want a warm body out there.
Oh no, the just warm bodies are at the bottom of those lists, right? And Cutline and NFBC best ball leagues in general, little different than some other sites. You actually get the benefit of the multi-positional eligibility, right? Some sites, best ball leagues, players are assigned one position and it doesn't change no matter what happens throughout the season. They are that one position. The NFBC leagues, including the Cutline and Raz Slam, the multi-positional eligibility comes into play, and that's a huge advantage when they're getting slid into different spots for the best score of the week that your roster can score. So that's another thing to take into account as well.
Yeah, in the drafts alone, the multi-positional eligibility makes a big difference. I know in my Raz Slam, you know, I had the number two. I took Mookie without thinking about it just because of the dual eligibility. And at that time, it had not been, I don't think it had been announced that he was going to get, you know, shortstop or everyday shortstop run. So bonus. But that's in the first round. You still see guys bump up multiple ADP spots, if not rounds of spots in the draft compared to what you see in a DC ADP or an OC ADP, just based on the fact that they can provide value at, not multiple positions per se, but you have multiple options at where those stats can go, what holes they can fill. Are you spending up more for those types of players in this fab run then? I'm assuming what's more important, the fact that, you know, what kind of playing time you think they're going to see or how many positions they could possibly be available. We're talking like, I'm just scrolling through the roster ship on the Cutline right now. And we have guys that like Enrique Hernandez, you mentioned earlier, available at three different positions, but, you know, not sure how he's not playing every day. And we don't, you know what his playing time is going to be, but the fact that he is eligible at three different positions makes him more or less valuable than his playing time. So how do you balance that out when you're considering those bids?
I'm looking at playing time first, in the way you asked the question, I think I'm looking at playing time ahead of position eligibility. Of course, we're trying to figure out the quality of the innings pitched and at bats that we'll get. But the positional eligibility is, I think, at this point, more of a bonus. When we were drafting some of these teams, it could be taken into consideration, I think. But I'm, for example, I'm looking at the players available in my Raz Slam league, multi-positional eligible players. I'm looking at Gio Urshela, off to a great start. We don't know what his playing time is going to be like going forward. Kyle Farmer. Yeah, you know, we talk about him multiple weeks throughout the season and will this year as well. for matchups, but is he going to get enough playing time that we're really interested in this format? It would depend on our need. And I don't think that's a cop-out saying that. Of course we know that. And then we're getting all the way down to Andy Ibanez, Gabriel Arias. So most of the multi-positional eligible players were drafted, and probably because there was a premium placed on those players during the drafts. But it is still something we're going to take a little bit of a look at. But for most players that are available at this time in most of our leagues, I think it's more of a bonus.
Fair. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's great to look at these comparisons. Obviously, the same kind of format, you know, different timing on when the drafts between the Raz Slam and the cut lines. But you kind of touched on it earlier, but are you still willing to stash guys in this format, especially on this first IL run, first fab run, as opposed to the second fab run? I'm assuming, you know, you're less likely to hold on to stashes in June fab run, but does that mean that you're more likely to hold on to those stashes? And I'm talking both prospects that didn't quite make the team, but you're hoping they still will, and IL stint players that aren't out for the entire season, but you do expect them to come back, like, you know, the Robbie Rays of the world and even the Garrett Coles and et cetera, et cetera. And it's just interesting. Like, I just did a control F on Jared Jones to see that he is 45% rostered in cut line and 97% rostered in Raz Slam. And obviously that has more to do with the timing of drafts that happened. Not willing to make that risk on drafting Jared Jones back in December. But obviously, once spring training gets started and we see how well he's doing, it's much more likely that you will draft him in that scenario in Raz Slam. So if you have a guy like Jared Jones that maybe didn't get picked up, I mean, even Victor Scott is 100% rostered in Raz Slam. Are you willing to hold on to these guys that aren't on the rosters now, but maybe you kind of hope or expect, like a Jackson Jobe or the likes of that? Or if they're not playing right now, they're not on my team.
No, I'm willing to stash a couple of guys, both injuries, say a Max Scherzer, for example, and prospect. We have to be careful. We've talked throughout the offseason about how valuable these guys can be in draft and hold leagues because you need reinforcements. So we can take some shots on some guys coming back from injury midseason or getting the call midseason and coming to fortify our rosters. And that is true of these cut line and Raz Slam leagues as well. I really don't want somebody I don't see having a chance to come back or up relatively soon, but there is value in those reinforcements. The problem is these are only 42 roster spots as opposed to the 50 in a draft and hold. So that limits it. You can't do it as much as you would in a DC, but I think there is still some value in trying to get some reinforcements, even though they're not going to help your score for, say, a month.
Now, you think about this during draft, but I think you have to think about it even more so during this fab run, especially based on what we've been literally talking about most of this episode, with all the injuries happening, especially revolving around pitchers. Are you reevaluating the percentage of pitcher to hitter, what your pitcher to hitter ratio is on your roster when it comes to this fab run? Are you more likely to kind of just bulk up on even more pitchers? You might have already drafted more pitchers than hitters. I know I did. I took most of my pitchers in the second half of my draft, of my Raz Slam draft, but I took a whole lot of them and a whole lot of them in a row. But I might be willing to add more, just to have that extra backup. What's your general take on like roster construction based on what we've been seeing so far this season in this very short season.
Yeah, I think so. So the advantage of this is a best ball format, but we have two fab runs. So we have that advantage over most best ball leagues that don't do fab at all. So we can make these adjustments. And I think it is to our advantage seeing the landscape and all of these injuries, especially with the pitching, that we can make these adjustments and maybe add an extra pitcher or two in place of an injured and or underperforming or didn't make the roster position player. We've still got to be careful. Like I said, we only have 42 spots, and this is a typical NFBC 23 man starting lineup, right? So we don't have a ton of bench spots. 42 sounds like a huge roster. 19 bench spots, I think double digits minimum of those has to be pitching with the landscape we're looking at. And I have found in the past, relief pitchers are undervalued in these leagues. It's easy to do. It's easy to look at and say, oh, you want starters to start weeks. It's best ball. If they get blown up, they're not in my lineup. They get their two starts. I get chance for a couple of wins. I get extra strikeouts. But the relievers do score as well or better than the lower end starting pitching. So that's something to take a look at, especially unlike last year, we've had quite a bit of turnover in the closing ranks. Guys, we talked about the last couple of weeks, Ginkle. And so this thing, we get another fab run, right? So when Seawold comes back, you can let Ginkle go. We got Foley. We got some of these Uribe in Milwaukee or Piamps, whoever you think is going to run with this job. These guys can be very valuable in this format.
Yeah, I mean, that is to say, if Ginkle doesn't lose the job before this fab run, and you might want to drop him now, I'm not sure. We can get into that later.
Oh, it's been nuts.
Yeah, I was just doing a count of getting my Raz Slam, and I've got, 7 hitters on my bench, and the rest are pitchers. I'll probably end up keeping that same ratio going after this fab run clears, but I wouldn't be necessarily surprised because I know I definitely prioritized multi-positional eligibility in my draft. So I have a little bit more flexibility to add another pitcher or two if I really wanted to, just kind of to pad that in case, you know, we don't get to fab again until June. So you want to make sure you have all the options at your disposal. So so we'll see how that runs. This is to say, basically, anybody listening who only does Raz Slam, it's really easy to forget about this fab run.
100%.
For those who are obviously, Kevin, you said, if you're doing a bunch of cut lines, you've been working on this fab for a while. So at least you've got your draft set. If you don't, you should probably get on that. But if you only did like one cut line or you only do Raz Slam, this is a very different fab run than your weekly fab run. It runs on Tuesday. Just don't forget. I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and lie and say I've never forgot the Raz Slam fab league, fab run, because I have, because what the heck? I know you gotta, you
Tuesday
can't
Tuesday night.
Yeah, it's a Tuesday night. Come on. But at the same time, if you want a chance to win, you got to pay attention. I think I won my league that year that I forgot to do the first fab run, but I had a whole lot of money in June.
Yeah, a lot of money.
That was fun. Yeah. I got everybody I wanted in June. And so that helped me down the stretch run, at least to win the league. I don't think I ranked in the playoffs, which is still, you know, it is what it is. All right, so again, I'm going to leave you guys with that. Do not forget your fab runs in those leagues. It's important to, obviously, as Kevin mentioned, you want as many active players as possible on your roster because it is best ball and it is points. So get on that. Now let's talk about actual fab, weekly fab, like we always do, Kevin. Get through our standard 5x5 fab runs with some player recommendations to who we might be looking at to spend some money on. And there's going to be a lot of money spent this week. There's no way around it. I'm sure most of it is going to go toward pitching. So on the flip side, there is an opportunity to maybe save some money on the hitter side if there are some guys out there worth looking at. So keep an eye on who is available in your league and what kind of categories you think you're going to be struggling with as April trudges on and we hit into the spring and things start to warm up. So let's start, as we always do, Kevin, in the power category. We're looking for home runs. We're looking for RBIs, especially in April, as most games are a little colder. Ball, in theory, shouldn't be flying as much, but you know, we are seeing some. Actually, there's a question I was going to add to the news I didn't add. I'm just going to ask you this right off the bat: how many major league teams that would play a 3-game series against the Norfolk Tide would lose that series? Norfolk Tide, the AAA team for the Baltimore Orioles, who have been putting on, you put MLB The Show on easy without injuries and the types of scores that you would be putting up if you played the game more than once. They've been putting up those kind of scores lately. So I'm going to put you on the spot here. I did not put this on, but like, if you put up the Tide against any MLB team, how many of those teams would they end up beating in a 3-game series?
Depending on how the pitching rotation lined up, they could beat all 30 teams. And there's at least 15 to 20 that, regardless of that pitching matchups, I would pick Norfolk.
I honestly realize this now. I probably should have saved this for the wild card section. Like, we're gonna go ahead. This is the wild card section.
Norfolk is our wild card, right?
It really is. Like, that lineup is absolutely insane.
The other night when they were all hitting home runs and
multi home runs,
10 RBI. It was crazy.
I noticed, like, on Yahoo, Hearson Kerstedt is like the top added player. And he's not even on Baltimore yet, but because he just can't stop hitting home runs for Norfolk, like, he obviously, people are trying to get ahead of the game. So yes, I'm rearranging this a little bit. That is the wild card section right there. The wild card is literally anybody on the AAA team for Baltimore. Keep an eye on that if they are available. Maybe they got dropped. Maybe somebody drop Jackson Holliday just because he didn't make the roster. I don't know. Always check, right? All right. So let's look at guys who are actually playing for a major league team and can provide value for our 5x5s here. In the power category, Kevin, home runs, RBIs, who you got your eye on?
Speaking of Baltimore, Ryan O'Hearn is picked right up where he left off last season. He's hitting fifth in the lineup every single time they face a right-handed starting pitcher. They appear to be lined up to face 5 out of 6 right-handed starters this week. So Ryan O'Hearn, and he's got some pretty nice availability. Oh, I didn't write it down on this one. Give me 1 second. This will be real quick. I don't think he's too... 58% rostered in main events, obviously lower than that in the 12 team RotoWire online championships. But yeah, as long as they're going to continue to let Ryan O'Hearn be the designated hitter versus right-handed pitching, he qualifies at both first base and outfielder. Way better than some of the fifth outfielders I have on some of my rosters right now, and only 3% rostered in those 12 team online championships. I think this is an easy pickup for a lot of my rosters this week.
All right. Nice. Okay. Yeah. I thought it was a good little segue to stay with, as I saw you put O'Hearn on here, stay with Baltimore here. You know, I like
both of your picks here too.
They're not. All right. I'm going to be clear. These are not my picks, right? But I'm glad you like them. I tried to get ahead of this. Now we have our weekly projections live over at Pitcher List with, if you have a PL Pro membership, you can access those weekly projections every, Kyle said he's going to have those updated on Saturdays. And then also update them again, on Sunday nights before Fab runs. So, these are going to be what Nick calls the PL bot, selections, and they're more, this is more manual, me going through the list, double checking the percentage rosters and picking one or two of the top names on the list from that filter. So it's not programmed. This is just me kind of doing my own filter. First name that pops up that is readily available pretty much everywhere, less than 10% rostered, Joey Gallo. You know, I know he's got the little red box on his lefty showing that he is probably a platoon, at least on roster resource, but he's playing every day. He did miss, you know, he didn't start one game against the lefty, but he did start the previous two games for the Nationals. And so PLBot has got him projected for, let's see where he's got four home runs. Yeah, an even one. So he's basically got, oh, those are doubles. Let's get this together, Adam. All right.
While you're looking, one point with Joey Gallo, he's back. You know, the last couple of years have been a little rough, even in OBP leagues. This is where I'm going. OBP leagues, obviously, he gets a big boost. His OPS so far, I think, is 950 something because he does have the couple of home runs, but he is back to walking and getting on base. So he gets that boost in OBP leagues.
Yeah. So PL Bot's got him projected to hit 189 on the week. You know, that seems about right. But he's got a 1-4 home runs, which the way I kind of look at this, you know, these are weekly projections. So you can only project.
Yeah, that's 27 for the year.
That's a 100% chance of hitting a home run in the week. That's the way I look at it. It's a guarantee.
Just mark it down. Put it in the box score.
Batting in the middle of the lineup as well, you know, even in a poor lineup, you know, you're still going to get your RBI opportunity. And that's what we're looking at here. The other guy worth throwing out there just based on rostership and what PLBot thinks he could do, he would have been on last week's too, as I was kind of looking through this, is Seth Brown of Oakland. He is 14% rostered in the main event, so we've got plenty of opportunity to get him off your fab leagues. So looking at Seth Brown, Joey Gallo is probably my favorite of the two, but we've got some nice options here as far as PLBot is concerned. So let's move into the speed categories here, Kevin. Who are your human picks for stolen bases and runs scored going into the next week of games?
There's one guy I just want to briefly mention. He's 100% rostered in main events. He's 96% rostered in online championships, but that means there's a handful of leagues out there where you should run and check if Bryce Turang is available if you are in the need of stolen bases. As of a couple of days ago, I think he had attempted a stolen base with every opportunity he'd had so far this season. And as long as he continues to be successful, we may see that continue. Right. Not available in a lot of spots, but those of you in 10 and 12 team leagues out there, take a look. I know a lot of those are points leagues, but those stolen bases still add up as well when it's not a category and it's just points you're getting for them. The guy much more available that I like specifically for the first half of this week in NFBC formats, John Birdie of the Yankees. He is playing versus left-handed pitching. has not attempted a stolen base yet this season, and only attempted 22 last season. But three out of three left-handed starting pitchers for the New York Yankees the first half of this week. I expect to see John Birdie in all three of those games. So I'd be pretty surprised if we don't see a stolen base or two out of Birdie the first half of this week.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, John Birdie obviously still has the ability to steal bases as long as he's given the opportunity to do so. All right, PL Bot, they got some interesting names on here. Just in the fact that nobody actually wants to roster these guys, but Peelbot thinks that they could do something pretty good out there if given, again, the opportunity. Isaiah Kiner-Falefel, 5% roster in the main event, and Kevin Kiermaier, 2%. So we got a couple of Blue Jays out here readily available on there. Both projected to get close to one stolen base on the week. So we got you basically the way I look at it, like an 80% chance of getting a stolen base. So that's pretty good odds, especially when it comes to stolen bases and guys that don't necessarily play all the time. Though they've got both of these guys with a suggested 23.5 plate appearances on the week. So, you know, in line with, you know, more than a handful of games throughout the course of the week. And as long as these guys are getting in there, you know, they have had a history of being able to steal a bag or two. What do you think of these two options when it comes to guys that are readily available and possibly can get thrown into your roster? Are you going with the over or under versus what PL Bot is thinking on these two guys, Kevin?
I like Kiermaier, I think, a little more than Kiner-Falefel. And that could very well be a mistake. Kiner-Falefel always seems to get more playing time than I expect him to get.
Than he deserves. Yeah, that's about right.
See, I was saying it more nicely, Adam.
Yes, you were.
More than I expect him to get. However, I'd be more inclined to throw Kevin Kiermaier in a deep lineup.
All right. All right. Let's get into some guys that might have some opportunity ahead of themselves based on their schedule and their matchups and all that good stuff. Some schedule notes to keep in mind as you are making these fab considerations. There are about seven teams that have seven games this coming week: Milwaukee, Cincinnati, Philadelphia, the New York Mets, Atlanta, Texas, Houston, and Minnesota. That is eight teams. I can do math. And then there are no teams that have 2 days off this week, which is always a fun time. But there are two teams that have a random Wednesday off. It doesn't really affect you too much when it comes to considering those first half lineups, but just, you know, for any other leagues that might have that might make a play here, Detroit and Pittsburgh do have Wednesday off as opposed to Monday or Thursday. Colorado, they'll be home for three to start the week versus Arizona. So get all of your Arizona bats while you can get them. And the true rocky road starts with three at Toronto over the weekend. One may say or suggest that Colorado is bad enough where it didn't really matter if they were on rocky road. But now we get the added benefit of having to adjust from Colorado's air to the Toronto air in, you know, the dome. So with all that in mind and anything else that you want to consider, Kevin, who are you looking at to have themselves a week based on maybe added playing time or cool matchups that they get to look forward to, or parks that they get to play in?
I'm looking at three Texas Rangers this week. Josh Smith appears to be the beneficiary of more playing time with the Josh Young injury, at least versus right-handed pitching, and that's all Texas has seen so far since that injury. So it's a little difficult to know if we're going to see him versus lefties. I kind of doubt it. I think we'll see either Justin Foscue or Ezekiel Duran, who one way or another gets in the lineup versus lefties. As of right now, it has been first base, giving Jared Walsh a break when they have faced a left-handed starter early in the season. But Texas faces, or looks like they could be facing, four left-handed starting pitchers this week. So that's Foscue and Duran. I still think Josh Smith is the more desirable pickup here. One, he's available everywhere, not rostered at all in NFBC formats, at least the main events and online championships I looked at. And he's at least going to get the starts versus righty. So even if this week we can't use him, we should be able to use him most weeks going forward. And maybe that keeps the price down on him this week. So I really like Josh Smith, with honorable mention to Duran and Foscue here for this week. But Josh Smith, more long-term, they found more damage than they expected when they did Josh Jung's surgery. So now they're thinking at least 10 to 12 weeks that he's going to be out. When I see 10 to 12 weeks, I start thinking more like 3 to 4 months and maybe longer, because you just never know what's going to go on during the rehab. So I like Josh Smith quite a bit going forward.
Yeah, it's like one of those things. I think Jason Klett always says, you know, you always tack on, you know, an extra week or two, depending on the length of what they're saying.
Right, from the high end, don't go to the low end. Oh, he's going to be back in 8 weeks. No. Oh.
3 to 5 weeks. It's 5.5 at least. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Tag on a week for every 3 weeks that they are suggesting. All right. Some interesting names here, though, from PL Bot, based solely on expected plate appearances. We've got Brian Rocchio of Cleveland, 42% roster in the main event, though, batting every day for Cleveland at the bottom of the lineup. We'll throw that out there, but performing quite admirably in that role, as he's cemented himself at shortstop for the Guardians. The more interesting one that I found here was Jesse Winker, who is readily available, batting in the heart of the Washington lineup again every day. So regardless of those matchups, yeah, when he faces a righty, he bats a little higher, typically around third. When he faces the lefty, he gets knocked down to fifth or sixth, but still, it's still in that middle third-ish region of the lineup. And again, same thing with Gallo. You get enough playing time in the heart of a lineup, you're going to get your opportunity. So Jesse Winker, I think that is a good call out, especially with the rostership at 9%. And he is also performing, playing every day in an outfield position. And we all know how our thoughts revolved around the outfield position as we were drafting. It might not be your weakest spot with all these pitcher injuries, but if you lost Eloy, not Eloy, he was filling your UT spot. But if you lost Robert, you've got some options out here. Jesse Winker should at least be in those waterfall bids, if not toward the top, especially since he's readily available in your deepest of leagues. Yeah, let me get your thoughts on those two guys, Kevin. You saw the names on here already. Were you a fan of PL Bot's choices here? Or are we, you thinking that this is kind of a stretch?
No, I am. I almost included Jesse Winker myself here. Yeah, hitting third versus righties. They do face probably three lefties again this coming week. Hits lower in the order against them, but he is playing every day against righties and lefties. And once they have weeks where you see your typical 5 out of 6, even 6 out of 7 right-handed starters, then I'm definitely going to want him in my lineup. So that makes this a good week to pick him up, even if it's a very short-term stash. If you have the room, somebody like this, maybe I'm not using him this week, but I can if I have to for the weekend. That's huge. but I'm looking more at a little forward. Here it goes for this week, Adam. This is your conservatively aggressive pick for the week, Jesse Winker.
Nice, nice. You got to have at least one, right? All right, fine. Now let's get to what everybody may or may not be waiting for, is the fact that you're going to be spending, if not you, somebody or multiple people in your league are going to be spending a lot of money on pitchers. So you're going to want to see who's available and who should be in consideration. Let's start with wins and Ks, because that is going to be, you know, what you're focused on, at least on the surface here. If you're, especially if you're, you know, in the boat of losing guys like Strider or even Bieber, or finally you can pull the trigger on, you know, dropping Yuri Perez for that matter. If you're like me and you just could not quite drop him a little too early, now I will be dropping him in where I have him as well. Who do you got to add some wins and Ks, at least for this week? Maybe further down the line, because you won't have many choices otherwise.
Right. That could be the case. But I am only thinking of this week. Spencer Tonernbull looked good in his debut earlier this week. He is at St. Louis on Monday and then gets a two-step as Philadelphia has a seven-day week, probably Saturday. Whether it's Saturday or Sunday, it would be back at home in Philadelphia versus Pittsburgh. Now, both St. Louis and Pittsburgh hitting the ball better than they did last season, but neither one is a team that I'm going to run and hide from, especially in the environment we have now. We could do a lot worse than Spencer Turnbull in a two-step versus St. Louis and Pittsburgh.
How dare you? Yeah, you, if for whatever reason anybody's not listening to The Craft with Nick Pollock and Eno Saris, change that right now. Go listen to the last episode that just came out. Eno does a nice little deep dive on how Spencer Turnbull has been doing, his thoughts on that, and obviously going back and forth with Nick on that as well. So make sure you're listening to The Craft. Wherever you're listening to this podcast, you can find that one, and you'll get a little bit more insight into Turnbull and why, you know, spoiler alert, likes what he's doing. PL Bot, let's see what they've got here. It's interesting to try to find pitchers on this list, just because you had to kind of figure out by dollar value, and then figure out where that dollar value is coming from. So again, PL Bot, last week they loved everybody in Pittsburgh. This week it's everybody in Washington. Jake Irvin is, even though he doesn't have a two-step, valued right alongside the likes of Grayson Rodriguez and Reed Detmers and Clark Schmidt and Hunter Green, for that matter, Nick Pivetta, all in the same kind of $1 to $2 boat in price. So Jake Irvin, with the matchups that he's got for this coming week, somebody to keep an eye on for the win possibility. I know that's weird coming from somebody that's pitching for Washington, but I think it's a sneaky little suggestion here for PL Bot. The other end of that, again, also strange to talk about him in the opportunity of getting a win in Oakland. We have Paul Blackburn, who has shown some good stuff as of late. Even for the A's, will have an opportunity there. So look for PL Bot's choice in for the week. And PL Bot makes a lot of other daily streamer choices on a daily basis as well. This is more consolidating based on the availability in main events, in online championships, mostly main events, and who's readily available here. So again, Jake Irvin, Paul Blackburn, especially when it comes in the volume categories. Hopefully they can sneak out a win and go deep enough into the game and their bullpens don't screw it up for them. does this seem like a stretch based on the fact that these guys, Kevin, are pitching for such bad teams? Or is it worth the risk? Again, neither one of these guys, I believe, are lined up for a two-step as well. So is it just the opportunity ahead of themselves? Do you think that PLBot likes, or do you think these two pitchers are guys that will probably stick on your roster and can be replaced? Obviously not full replacements for the likes of Bieber or Strider or what have you, but guys that you can kind of trust long term and not just this coming week.
No, I don't think I'm going into this planning on or even hoping to hold them longer. However, I think Blackburn is a perfect example of how guys get overlooked, right? We look for guys on good teams. We look for guys with two starts on bad teams with good matchups. And then we forget that a nice matchup at home in one of the best ballparks in Major League Baseball to pitch in, and the Washington Nationals are coming to town. Love Paul Blackburn this week, and he can be overlooked due to the fact that it's one start and he's on a horrible baseball team. But I'd love this matchup.
Oh man, poor Oakland. I love it. We already start seeing part factor.
Have you started stockpiling Oakland players in your keeper leagues yet?
No, just AL West players.
All of them. Yeah.
Yeah, just all.
even if it's only 13 games for opponents, six or seven away games for each other team in the West. Half of the 13. That it's worth it, right? We're stockpiling.
I love seeing the tweets, overall park factors for Sacramento, or West Sacramento technically. But at the same time, there was one tweet that's like, oh, well, in the PCL, it plays as a pitcher's park. don't read too much into that one statement. As anybody listening probably is already well aware, the PCL.
Yeah, tell me it's a pitcher's park.
Yeah. I cannot wait. The different podcast conversation. So we will move on here. Let's get into ratios, Kev. We got ERA and WHIP to worry about, not just the volume week to week. You start forgetting about it each week, then you start getting behind real early, real quick. So who might you be filling in your pitcher slots to help kind of chip away at it in the early going?
Yeah, I'm looking at Josh Spores this week. He is somebody that will probably come up in this category throughout the season. Not somebody that's going to be heavily rostered, but for the Texas Rangers, comes in and typically gives us really nice ratios. He did pitch on Saturday, only his third outing of the season. That's a bit concerning because we do want a little bit of volume out of these guys. But I don't expect for him to pitch on Sunday. So I do expect to see him at least twice, if not three times. That is the hope with the upcoming week. But yeah, he's one of the guys that we'll probably bring up in this category more than once throughout the season, with a 7-game week coming up for Texas. And the fact that I don't expect to see him on Sunday makes him even more enticing this week.
I love hearing about the same guys every other week, and I don't expect to not hear Spores' name quite a bit in this category. PLBot's got some interesting names here. The less readily available one, Kyle Gibson, 44% roster in the main event, so still available in more than half of those leagues, with a decent showing in his last outing and then moving forward. Tyler Alexander for Tampa Bay, this is going to be in the ratio category, not expected to pitch five innings on the week, but still be productive in the expected 4.24 innings. I love when innings are actually put in a column and data with actual numbers and not just a 0.1, 0.2. But you know, should end the week, at least projected to end the week, with a 3.85 and a 1.21 whip. Sorry, 3.85 ERA, of course, 1.21 whip on the week. You know, might knock in a three or four strikeouts along with that. And who knows, maybe Vulture will win in the process, but readily available. Looking at a decent start here through, you know, with Tampa Bay. It's always going to be something to consider. Again, we are only worried about ratios here, Kevin, but like, is somebody like Tyler Alexander, who may not be projected to go a full five innings and, you know, almost assuredly does not have a chance at a win in that scenario, you know, a starter, is he still like, are you still interested in somebody like that if you're somewhat assured that he's going to help your ratios?
So the answer, since that is the category we're talking about here, specifically ratios, ERA and WHIP, should be no. I'm not taking that into consideration. I'd be happy to get the innings of good ratios out of him. However, in reality, when I'm picking these guys, I'm going to lean more towards a follower, if not a flat-out reliever, unless I think he can go the five innings, because there is that backup hope that we can snag a win or a save in addition to boosting our ratios and getting a handful of strikeouts. So in theory, I shouldn't care, but I do.
Yeah, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly on that situation. So it's you know, I got to throw him in here. Tyler Alexander, he is the more readily available of the two. Kyle Gibson is probably more interesting to me, as he, you know, very easily can go six innings, could even get you the quality start along with everything else if you're in that sort of league, and still get you a, you know, right around a four ERA on the week in one, and, you know, not too worried about it. As you like to say, you know, I'll take the four or five ERA. that if he went six innings, it means, you know, he put yourself in a situation for those volume stats as well. Again, you don't want that every time, but at the same time, if you're streaming him, right, that's not going to be the end of the world. PL Butts got him projected for a 4.11 ERA in his one start, and a possibly hurtful WHIP at a 1.39, but just under six innings projected for Gibson. So could still volume way into productivity.
We can throw these guys out there without worrying about the ratios when we have Spencer Strider and Shane Bieber at the top of our rotation, right?
If, yeah,
isn't
of course,
that how this is supposed to work?
That's how it works. Yes, every time, without fail. All right, we get some saves.
So rough, man.
Let's go, man. All right, well, let's go into a category that is never anything to worry about. Of course, with our relievers and saves category. This is a category PL Bot has no opinion on. So, Kevin, this is all on you. Who is picking up some saves for us this week and beyond, hopefully, as we talk about? I mean, it was the hot topic in the first two Fab runs, really. And things are starting to settle a little bit. As I kind of mentioned earlier, Kim Ginkle, you know, not looking that great in Arizona. They don't have a whole ton of options to kind of take it over for him until Seawald comes back. So I'm not too worried about him. You know, I joke that he might lose that job before the Tuesday Fab run. But I don't venture to guess that that'll actually happen unless he like kind of forces their hand. Since they were so vocal about it, when Seawald went down, you know, Ginkle came out and said, like, yep, they told me to get ready to save games. So I'm assuming that he's got that job locked down for a while. But there are still some other situations out there. Who do you have your eye on to add some saves?
All right, there's a couple of guys they are not available in very many deep leagues. But I think this kind of ran its course last week, right? A lot of these guys got picked up in the 15 teamers and deeper, definitely the only leagues. But both these guys are available in a couple of 15 team main events, and then many more 12 team leagues. James MacArthur, the Kansas City Royals, I think is taking over the mostly ninth inning guy for Kansas City. Will Smith has not been good. It's not just the results. His velocity's down. And he's somebody that didn't have a lot of velocity but to begin with, but he's throwing 88, 89. And that just doesn't cut it against Major League Baseball hitters, especially as a reliever, right? MacArthur did get the save on Friday. Chris Stratton got it on Saturday. MacArthur had also pitched on Thursday. MacArthur's underlying numbers look really good. So my hope is that there are some MacArthur rosterers out there that look at his overall numbers, especially if he doesn't pitch again on Sunday. He's just got that one save. His ERA is like 7-something. He might become more available for next week.
There we
Keep that in mind. As of right now, 98% rostered, only 64% rostered in online championships, though. So available in a third of 12 teamers. I would expect 10 and 12s out there, even more availability. And I think he is taking over the mostly everyday role. And then
I'm gonna jump in here because with Kansas City, the one name that you did not mention because he hasn't really done it yet is somebody, Eric Samulski. It keeps trying to make happen. I keep meaning like stop. I want to use the meme like stop making, you know, stop trying to make fetch happen meme. But he keeps throwing out Schreiber, John Schreiber, of course, who got acquired in, via trade with my Red Sox,
who has been the best Royals reliever so far.
That's the point, is the fact that he's been the best reliever, put his name in the ring, or does it actually do him disservice to be like the best reliever, so he would be used in the best situation, which might not necessarily be the ninth inning?
I think that's where we're at. I think that's his role, and more days than not means he's pitching the eighth. Mm-hmm. If it matchups, yeah, they might use MacArthur earlier, save him for the ninth based on matchups, but I think in general we're looking at Schreiber then MacArthur going forward for Kansas City unless we see Will Smith straighten some things out, which would mean gaining quite a bit of velocity back, which at his age, I don't know if we're going to see.
Yeah, that's probably not in the cards.
And then David Robertson, similar situation with the Cubs, right? Alzolay's struggled a little bit. I got the save either today or yesterday. He got another one recently, kind of got back on track a little bit. But David Robertson looks like he could very easily slide back into the spot like he has several times in his career. I know there was a lot of people on this in the offseason. That's why he's 98% rostered in main events, but 72% in the 12 teamers. So over a fourth of leagues available in. Like you say, it's worth taking a look. Go check. See if he's available. You know, both of these teams are, I don't think either one is, you know, even going to win 90 games, but both of them have good chances at being over 500 and contending. And if we end up scoring a guy that's going to get 80% of their save chances, we're in a good spot.
David Robertson was on just about every waterfall bid that I had last week. And he was just a little too far down on every one.
Well, so if like, those were closer waterfall bids, then you must have done all right.
In most situations, I got a guy or two that I really needed or wanted in those scenarios. But But yeah, he was still in a what, like he was mixed in with just pitcher fill in spots. It's like, all right, if I don't get any of these starters, he's still going to be in the conversation. So yeah, I mean, he should be on more of my teams. It just didn't have him in the right spot on the waterfall for him to actually win out that one, which I guess is a good thing, because that means I got somebody else. All right, well, we touched on the wild card at the very beginning, but Kevin, has anybody else come to mind as far as somebody that you might be looking at if you? I mean, actually have the ability to stash anybody at this point.
Yeah, it's getting rough, right? And yeah. We need our spots in leagues where we don't have an IL. And we joked about the Norfolk Tides earlier, but any of those players, obviously, Kierstad is a guy that I've had in a couple of dynasty leagues and keeper leagues for quite some time, and I'm excited to see him soon, and I think we will. Unfortunately, that might mean we don't get to use our Ryan O'Hearn and some other guys for Baltimore, but I think we're going to see him soon in leagues where you are able to pick him up. I think go ahead and stash him. I don't think it'll be much longer. Like you said, any of those guys. I'm starting to think some of the injured guys as well. In fact, in one of my 15 team NFBC leagues last week, of course he was dropped. My team is healthy. I'm knocking on all the wood I can find, all of it. I picked up Devin Williams. The news has been not negative. I wouldn't say positive, but not negative. No setbacks, right? Sure. They have not transferred him to the 60-day IL, at least last time I looked. I still think it'll probably be into June or late June before we see him. But if they haven't moved him to the 60-day IL yet, that means there's some hope there with the organization, I would think. I know stretch fractures in a back sound horrible, and they are, and the fact that he had to push them to go get reevaluated for it to even be found is concerning from a whole nother conversation, like we say all the time. But things seem to be moving along just as best as they could have hoped. If we're going to see Devin Williams, who was being drafted as the number one closer by the end of June, on rosters where you don't need the spot, it's time to work stash. Stash him as long as you can. If you have to end up dropping him again, fine. You're not paying anything for him right now.
Yeah, I mean, the cynic in me is obviously worried that Milwaukee just wants him on the field so they can trade him at the deadline. So they want to get him in there as much as possible to show him off and show he's quote healthy and show that he can produce, and they can get a Josh Hader type of deal back. And kind of go down that same road that they've already been down. Devin Williams doesn't seem like the type that's going to allow that to happen if he's not actually, since, like you said, he was the one that like was pushing for the second, third opinions or what have you, or the reevaluations at least. He may not allow that to happen because it is, you know, he's a human being and he has rights and he can say what's right for his body.
Cares about his body.
Yeah, exactly. He actually cares about what's going on. So, you know, we'll see how that works out. I will throw out just the general idea that it is only April 6th. We're probably still about, 2 weeks away until we start seeing that quote unquote 3 week deadline, that mystical 3 week deadline. For the extra year of control to come up with prospects. But if you do have the ability to, you know, stash somebody who you're really interested in, who you think might be coming up right after that, the, you know, the Chris Bryant treatment, I think, as it's been coined, the New York Mets obviously have lost. They just signed Julio Teheran, but they lost Tyler McGill for a little bit. So Christian Scott is somebody that's on my radar as getting a call up a little bit earlier than maybe we would have necessarily expected, especially after what we saw in spring training. So, I mean, it's just one name. But if you have any kind of flexibility and there's somebody that you had been thinking about and they were dropped because they didn't make the opening day roster, especially in an NFBC league with those rules, you might want to consider stashing them now while it's a little cheaper. If you have said flexibility, which is rare, I'm sure. But yeah, with that, Kevin, give us something positive to think about as we inevitably have to think about all the negative things that we are going to have to fab for this Sunday.
All right. Something to positive to think about spinning off of the negative here. All right. Don't panic. Right. We have Todd Whitestone come and join us each season for the past at least two, if not three seasons. And he breaks down the fab breakdown for the NFBC main event leagues for every week throughout the entire season. And year in, year out, what he shows us is after 4 to 5 weeks, the prices come down a lot. Money is spent. People don't have the money anymore. All that good stuff. People have more needs. They have to concentrate on a need rather than a want, these kinds of things. But the numbers go down. I don't think it, at least in deeper leagues, there's not anybody we have to have this week. You may think so because Strider, Bieber, you know, all this thing happened. Story. Oh, I got to fix this. You don't have to fix it all at once. In fact, you can't, right? That's the reality. We can't replace the guys we're losing, or we would have drafted the guy that we're replacing them with rather than the guy we lost, right? So don't panic. That doesn't mean maybe not spend a little more money if you want to. Last week, I did not get any Foley. I remember you were in the pitcher list Discord. Somebody was asking about an amount for Foley, and you responded, it probably takes 150 to get him, but I'm not going over 125. That's where I was. I was out of my comfort zone, but I was in the 115 to 125 range for him in most leagues. Didn't get him anywhere. Sure. That's fine. It's fine, right? I have that money now. To continue here after weeks 4 and 5, when Todd tells us we can start just racking players in for much less money. Yes, keep them honest bids. We want them in there. Sometimes you get lucky, but don't panic. We have 25 weeks to go and we're going to be okay.
I think that very first point that you made is that, you know, there's nobody that we have to have this week, and filling the Striders, filling the Beavers, filling those type of is not about filling with those players. It's just about filling. And so having more waterfall bids, having dozens, as you mentioned,
Don't get shut out. Don't get stuck with a guy. Exactly.
Exactly. So you don't need to spend more money on a guy to fill that roster spot. You just have to have options. And when you do that, you have the ability of bringing down your price as well and getting lucky. So if you have like two guys that you're bidding on for one open spot, if you want to fill that spot, you're going to have to bid up. But if you have 15 guys in that waterfall bid and you're basically perfectly happy with all of them being basically equal, then you can get them for dirt. You're going to get somebody for dirt cheap. So you can save that money now, as you mentioned. Now you have it for the rest of the season. But with all that is going to wrap it up for episode 158 of On the Wire. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. Kevin is at Hastings Kevin, and of course, follow the pod itself at On the Wire Pod. After all that, I am Adam Howe on behalf of Kevin Hastings. Thanks for listening, and we bid you goodbye.